Thanks tuned to yesterday broadcasting programs from radio's past. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Science fiction in this hour. Later on, a well-known story from the X-1 series, but right now it's Exploring Tomorrow. Hosted by famed sci-fi editor John Campbell Jr., this episode heard on December 18, 1957, on the Mutual Broadcasting System, called The Happiness Effect.
Exploring Tomorrow. And now here is your guide to these adventures of the mind, John Campbell, Jr.
There's the old saying, you'll do it and like it. And, of course, a man can, by physical force, make you do it. How would you like to have it so that you would like it, too? There are two basic ways that you can be happy in this world. One, of course, is to have everything you want in just the way you want it, and never have any difficulties or troubles. This method is ideal, perhaps, but not very probable. Only one person in the world could have that, I guess. The other method, for absolute, complete happiness, would be to like anything that you got, no matter what it was. The first approach is the one that makes sense, of course. That's the one we work for. We earn it. The other seems so much easier.
Stop barking. Stop barking. Stop barking. Oh, barking. No, that's all right, doggy. You bark as much as you want. Oh, how I wish I could get mad. In the old days, I'd have gone up that dog and told him to shut up, and that'd have been that, but no more. Just as soon as I start to get good and sore about something, my mind kind of all creams up in the happiness effect, and I'm not sore anymore. And everybody here in Benton, I guess most everybody in the country is just like me. We've all had our brains written on, and we're all happy. Here I am, chief of police of Benton, and never a crime to speak of unless it's overtime air parking, and what kind of crime you call that?
Henry!
Oh, here he comes. Our own Doc Royton, the man responsible for all our happiness. He's supposed to be just about the best brain writer this side of the Mississippi.
Henry!
Slobbo, that's what I call him. Old wet lips, always do good and always grinning. But behind that grin, believe me, ice. If you need an enemy, just have Doc Royton for a friend.
Henry, didn't you hear me calling to you?
Oh, sorry, Doc. I guess I just kind of stand here thinking.
Happy thoughts, I hope.
Oh, sure, happy thoughts, sure. What can I do for you, Doc?
A fellow just came into town, suspicious. Painting pictures out at Willow Hollow.
There's law against painting pictures at Willow Hollow?
Now, Henry, you know I got to keep my eyes on things. Wasn't for us brain writers, there'd be all kinds of irresponsibles roaming around. And these artists, they're the worst kind, you know that. You remember there was a day when you were headed for that kind of trouble?
Yeah, I remember. I was pretty good baritone, too. You sure brain wrote me out of that notion.
And aren't you better for it? You're a responsible citizen, happily married, well-adjusted, doing a job that's socially useful.
Yeah. What about this fella I'm supposed to investigate?
The name of Arnold Vivian.
And he's been painting up at Willow Hollow?
That's right. Doesn't do anything all day long but paint.
Single?
No wife, no children, no nothing. He just paints.
Well, remember, as long as he just paints, that's legal.
Now, Henry.
Now, don't Henry me, Doc. I'll look into it. That's all I can promise.
All right, that's all I ask. Right. Goodbye, Henry.
Mighty pretty landscape you're painting.
Why, thank you. Willow Hollow makes a mighty pretty landscape to paint.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, no, that's all right. I never mind a little talk when I'm painting. What can I do for you?
Your name Arnold Vivian?
That's right.
I'm Henry Horner, chief of police.
Nice to meet you. Chief of... What seems to be the trouble?
No trouble. I just out here to give you a kind of friendly warning.
About what?
Now, this town of Benton you're in needs new young men, Arnold. If you should happen to get in any trouble here, we got a real fast brain rider who likes to straighten people out.
I don't get into trouble.
Well, just keep in mind, we need workers these days. Like our brain rider would say, who needs pictures on canvas?
Who needs pictures on canvas? Why, Mr. Policeman, me. Maybe someday a few others will agree with me.
Well, maybe. I used to be a sort of artistic fellow myself. Baritone concert style.
Yeah, I'll bet you're good on a police whistle, too. Don't worry about me, Mr. Horner. Just go back and tell your brain writer. Here's one traveling man he won't ever get to use his scalpel on.
Every Saturday night, Benton has a dance. I usually don't go near it myself because since the brain writing, everybody's pretty well adjusted and ain't any police-type trouble. This Saturday night, though, I dropped in toward the middle of the evening.
Hi, Mr. Horner.
Hi, hello, Arnold. Having a good time?
Heck yes. I've been dancing with all the girls. They love me and I love them.
Staying out of trouble?
The only trouble I ever have is with pictures on canvas.
Well, don't go getting drunk and signing a job contract with Big Fellum at the Brickyard or with Tom Harth or you'll forget pictures.
I'm immune to job contracts. Also, it may interest you to know that both Mr. Harth and Mr. Fellum each bought a painting for me tonight, paid cash on the bar that
night. Well, that's a surprise. Well, I wonder what they're up to.
Well, why should they be up to anything? They just like my pictures. I guess they like me, too. They invited me to play poker with them after the dance tonight.
You turned them down, of course.
Heck no. I like taking money from people at poker.
Well, they're more likely to do the taking, and once you're broke, you'll just have to go to work.
Mr. Horner, when are you going to stop worrying about me? I told you, I can take care of myself.
And he could, too. When the poker game broke up about 3 a.m., he was the winner. Everybody was griping, all except Doc Royden, who sat there, his close-set eyes glittering behind thick spectacles.
Imagine him taking me for 30 bucks. Imagine.
Well, he knows people, he knows cards, he knows women. You're not going to brain-write that boy.
You want to bet, Henry? You just want to make a little bet.
Whether it's a crowded highway or a narrow street, a smooth, even flow of traffic is one of the essentials of safe driving. Speeding is an obvious hazard, but it can also be suicide. Slowpoke driving is dangerous, too, because it causes rear-end collisions and tempts other motorists into taking deadly chances in passing. The eccentric behavior of the lane switcher, the driver who weaves in and out, often is the cause behind frightful smash-ups. So don't be a cause, and don't be a victim. Arrive alive.
There are two difficulties with the happiness idea. One of them is that actually we need to earn happiness to enjoy it, but we don't really want to work for it. The drug addict has happiness that he doesn't have to work for, really. The other difficulty is happiness in whose terms? Many times, you know, the other fellow figures that you ought to be happy with what he's giving you.
That's right.
Henry, wake up and scoot over to Tony Holland Shack on the edge of the holler.
What's the matter, Doc?
There's been a crime. Get over here as fast as you can.
Somebody's got to keep an eye on our citizens at the police force.
Now, wait a minute.
Well, it's a good thing I was out this way.
Where's Tony?
I gave him a sleep injection. The poor fella, he was bashed on the head and all his savings were stolen. $302.
Well, can't you wake him up so he can tell me himself?
No need. I got all the information you'll want.
Who does he think did it?
He doesn't know, but I've got a good idea.
Yeah, like who?
Well, let's eliminate. It couldn't have been a passing tramp. Since brainwriting, there aren't any. And if you can't say it was anyone in town, they're all adjusted and wouldn't commit no crimes.
So?
Might be somebody around who wanders in the holler in the daytime, poking around and pretending to be what he ain't.
Well, it wasn't Arnold Vivian.
How do you know?
Because he's not that stupid. He knows he'd be the most likely suspect.
Maybe you'd just better check up on him, Henry.
Doc, you're the brain writer. They called you in after the maladjusted guy's been caught, but I'm the cop. I run my investigations the way I want, and I'm not going to build a case against Arnold Vivian.
What are you going to do?
You write on brains. Try reading one.
So you figure Doc Royden's trying to frame me, huh?
Looks that way.
Well, it's ridiculous. I just took you people at poker for enough money to live for 3 weeks. Why should I take a chance on getting my head written on?
Have you missed any of your stuff?
Oh, just my pen and pencil set that I lost jumping around at the dance last night. Hey, wait a minute. That'd make a fine clue, wouldn't it, at the scene of the crime?
It sure would.
Well, was it found over there?
Not yet, but it will be. That's not important, though. What is important is this. Tony Holland has one peculiarity. He marks $20 bills. Figures he can follow how the money goes around town that way. Now, you don't draw any money from the local bank or in salary, so you just better not have any local $20 bills marked by Tony.
Hey, whose side are you on?
I used to sing baritone, remember?
Police, I like you.
Artist, I kind of like you, too.
Henry! Look what we found at Tony's. Look here.
Yeah, I know. You found a clue, a pen or a pencil or both. We know all about it, Doc. Arnold, I better run you in, at least until we can investigate further. It'll look better.
Why, certainly. No trouble at all, Mr. Horner. Glad to come along.
I pressed for a hearing right away, figuring that Arnold could be cleared and then leave town. He figured the same, that it wasn't healthy to hang around a place that needed new talent so bad. The hearing went real fine. From the start, I testified that Arnold had been fast asleep at the time the crime was committed, and I swore that the pen and pencil had been planted in Tony's house. Then suddenly, they were talking about marked $20 bills.
Well, I couldn't possibly have any 20s, Judge. I just told you, I there's absolutely no way that I could have... Unless... No. No.
Let me out of here! Let me out of here! It's a frame-up! It's a frame-up, I tell you!
There is no tool that is either good or evil. There's nothing that in itself is good or bad. It's the way it's used. Logic is a wonderful thing, of great value to man and his progress. But in this trial here... You've seen what can be done with logic when someone is out to prove what he wants to prove and is not in the slightest interested in getting the truth.
Just one thing I want to say. I've seen a lot of raw deals, but the way you have it here with the singing cop to set it up is the slickest I ever saw. You win.
As chief of police, I had to be present at the brain writing. Doc's nurse gave Arnold the needle jab in the back of the neck, and after that, he sat there like a stone man, able to hear, but paralyzed.
Now, Henry, there we are. Yes, the clay model is ready to take the impressions from Arnold's brain, so we'll have an exact duplicate. Now we put this cap on Arnold's head, so the electronic fingers in it can do the measuring. That's a good boy. It won't take long now. Attach these wires to the automatic computer that we put above the clay model, and... There we are. An exact model of Arnold's brain. All right, let's take a look. Oh, me, oh, my. There's a brain that needs writing. All right. Look here, you see that? Decayed memory spots. Artistic imagination. Decayed sensory impressions. Quite useless in an adjusted society. Now, we just take the scalpel and start doing away with these 6 synapses in the brain model, substituting good ones. Isn't that what we do, Henry?
Yeah, that's what we do, all right. You erase the bad ones and carve some good ones, and then when his own brain gets the impression, the guy's adjusted from then on. Everybody does what they should, and they don't need no religion, no morals, no psychology, nothing. Just brain writing, and the world's work gets done.
Now, Henry, you always miss the most important part. After I get rid of the illogical synapses, I do one special cut with my stylus. There, I'm doing it now. And that's the happiness effect. Then your adjusted man not only does what he ought to, he's happy about it. There we are. Oh, that looks beautiful. Oh, that looks almost like the master brain. Let me get it and show it to you, Henry. It's real interesting. I'll be back in a second.
You know, Arnold, I sure wish I could help you. Wait a minute. Maybe I can. I'm going to try to put back some of those synapses he cut out. Here's a scalpel. You know, there's one he did. There's another. Maybe I can help you keep some of your artistic talent, Arnold. Yeah, here's a final one.
That one day, Henry, we'll be able to duplicate this master brain in everyone. It's brilliant. Take a look at it while I prepare for the transference from the clay model to Arnold's brain.
It sure is fine looking, this master brain.
Yes, yes, yes. Now, we're ready to go? Now, Henry, when I close this switch, the new brain shape will flash the signal to the cap on Arnold's head, the electronic fingers will dig in, and he'll have a new brain. Oh, I tell you, Henry, this is the real moment of birth. Most people are born wrong for this world. This is where they get right. All right, here we go. It's going to hurt a little. Well, Henry, we did it. We created a useful citizen.
Well, 6 months went by, and it looked as if Doc was right. Arnold took a job, settled down, and got himself married, and then...
Henry, have you seen that picture exhibition up at the town hall?
Picture exhibition? No, Doc. What's it about?
Arnold Villian, the sneak. Pictures of me, holding me up to ridicule. I'll be the laughingstock of this town. You've got to stop it.
Well, there's nothing illegal about pictures, Doc, but come on, let's take a look. We went to the town hall, and there was the neatest collection of pictures you ever saw. Arnold had painted Doc Royden more than 50 times, and in each picture he cut the basic evil of the man. Doc was shown at the council meeting, at church, at the dance, his face revealing every grimace of deceit, powerless conniving. Every picture was titled The Happiness Effect, and everyone was marked sold already. I knew then and there that Doc Royden was finished in battle.
Henry, please, I'm too old to start over in another town. I've got to stay in Benton. Please, Henry, get rid of those pictures.
Why, Doc, it sounds to me like you're maladjusted to your environment. You ought to be brain-ridden. You're the happiest.
Henry, man, I've been looking all over for you. I wanted to tell you thanks for using Doc's scalpel to save a piece of my talent.
Why, it was a pleasure, Arnold. Thanks to you for giving us back a little human dignity.
A lot of people tend to think that happiness is something you have. But I think it isn't. I think it's more in the nature of something you do. You know, the founders of our country were no fools. And in the Declaration of Independence, they said that men had certain inalienable rights, among which were the pursuit of happiness. No man has ever declared that happiness itself is a right of man. The pursuit of happiness is. It's worth working for.
Join us for a fascinating adventure in Exploring Tomorrow. Heard in our cast tonight were Mason Adams, Charlie Holmes, and Lawson Zerbe. Script was taken from a story by Raymond Banks. Produced and directed by Sanford Marshall here in New York. Bill Maher speaking.
We pause now for station identification.
Exploring Tomorrow on Tuned to Yesterday from December 18, 1957 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. That story, The Happiness Effect, was penned by Raymond E. Banks, who had another of his tales adapted on Exploring Tomorrow called Do It and Like It. Though his first radio appearance, or at least where his work was featured, was on the NBC Radio Institute program in 1946 with his tale called Decision. It actually had won a prize at the NBC-UCLA Radio Institute competition. It was about a pilot in mid-flight carrying a radioactive chemical who received a strange visitor. You're listening to an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now X-1 brings us the story Sea Legs. This was broadcast on May 1st, 1956 on NBC.
Now stay tuned for X-1 on NBC. Countdown for blast-off. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight, the Frank Quattrochi story, Sea Legs.
I stood in line at the Grav 1 desk with the old notched service record and tapes in my hand and waited for the bored processing clerk to speak. The clerk seemed utterly indifferent to the excitement of the men in the line. I wondered how long he'd been out here on this godforsaken Zone 5 planet.
Next. Name?
Robert Craig.
Occupation?
Flight officer.
Destination?
Earth.
Earth?
Anything wrong with that?
Well, I guess not. How long since you've been on Earth, Mr. Craig?
Well, I've never been there. My parents left during the second colonization of Cassiopeia. I was born there.
Have you ever been in a gravity system?
Oh, just briefly. Under drugs, of course.
You'll have to go through the gravity conditioning course.
Yes, so I was told.
Proceed to the airlock chamber on your right and follow the robot's orders. Good luck. You may need it. Next.
I went into the chamber and stripped off my clothing while the robot droned its orders.
Remove all metal objects from your person. Place them in the plastic tube at your left. Now stand underneath the decontamination tube. Depress the button with your right foot. This is all. Proceed through the green door to the psychometric section. Please respond quickly to orders, and so to not impede the progress of others. Next, please.
The door to the psychometric section led into a pleasant but cold-looking room with a single metal desk. A man with a balding, high forehead sat behind the desk.
Mr. Craig, have a seat. I'm Captain Wyandotte, the psychological officer.
Nice to meet you.
Yes, well, let's see your records. You list your destination as terror. You're certain you wish to go to Earth?
Of course I'm certain.
You're somewhat aggressive, Mr. Craig.
Look, I've been standing in line taking orders from clerks and robots for 6 hours. Every time somebody sees that I'm headed for Earth, I get the fisheye. Are they jealous or what?
I hardly think so. You've been a spaceman for 16 years, Mr. Craig. You've been zooming around in the countergraph systems in the outer galaxies without any restraints or self-discipline.
Have you ever spent 6 weeks strapped into a grav seat on a space rocket, Captain? There's a good deal of self-discipline involved in that.
I think you'll find things on Terra require a different kind of self-discipline, Mr. Craig.
Well, I'm pretty much aware of what it's like.
Are you? I suppose you've heard all the popularizations in the tapezines. Well, Mr. Craig, let me give you a word of caution. It's going to be vastly different.
I'm prepared for that, Captain. Can we get going?
Naturally. You will undergo a 20-day conditioning course.
20 days?
Mr. Craig, you've been in space 16 years. Your body is conditioned to a normal state of free fall, or at best, to acceleration. The return to gravity would kill you if you weren't prepared for it.
All right, what do I do?
Report to Centrifugal Department. Here are your papers. Oh, and Mr. Craig.
Yes?
Centrifugal is a rather trying ordeal. If during the course of treatment you should change your mind about returning to Earth, you're free to do so.
Thanks. I won't. I'd heard about Centrifugal, but you can never really know about these things until you experience them. Four times a day, we were whirled around until it seemed as if our insides were too big for our bodies. On the 12th day, it got to be too much for me. I was in the base hospital for 5 days. My roommate was an old space bum they'd brought in to die with a case of ruptured veins. His name was Charlie Brockman.
How you feel, son?
I'm pretty good, Charlie.
You get discharged tomorrow, I hear. You gonna try it again?
I guess so.
Why?
Only way I'll ever get to Earth.
You really want to go?
That's right.
You talk to anybody been there last 10 years or so?
No, you don't get to talk to many people from Earth in the galaxies. Were you ever there?
Me? Now, what would an old space bum like me be doing on Terra?
Well, I just thought maybe...
I done most of my time in Zone 5. Out there, you get to thinking anybody who stays less than 80 light years from Earth is a landlubber.
Yeah, I used to think the same. Then I took the exam for a job back on Earth, and I passed it.
I used to think I'd like to go back, but space was exciting, you know. New and raw, it tugged at your guts, and it sent the blood rushing through your veins. But it was free. No bureaucrat ever lasted 6 months in Grav 5.
I had enough hitting atmospheres all over the universe, old man.
Maybe you're right. Lean over here, will you?
Sure.
Unbutton my pajama top, will you?
Okay.
There's a chain around my neck. Got a little message capsule on it.
Oh, yeah, I got it.
Do me a favor, huh? Take it with you when you go back to Terra. Don't open it till you're on the ship.
Okay, Charlie.
And son.
Yes?
I lied to you. I have been back to Terra. I faked some papers and made a landing there 6 months ago.
What are you doing back here?
I had to leave in a hurry.
Why?
You'll find out, son. Good luck.
Charlie died the next day. A few hours later, I was visited by Captain Wyandotte, the psych officer.
How are you feeling, Craig?
Okay.
You still want to go back to Earth?
Yes.
You're completely sure you want to live out your life there, to give up space service for it?
Look, we've gone through this, Captain. Now, you tell me that spacemen don't settle down on Terra, yet you won't or you can't tell me why. All right, what's the pitch? Does the space service need men so badly that they have to make it impossible for us to go back?
That, Mr. Craig, you will have to discover for yourself. You have my authorization to complete your conditioning and return to Earth as a private citizen. I wish you luck. You'll need all you can get.
Somehow I managed to survive the torments for 18 days. I was ready to return to Earth. A month later, I descended from a huge intergalactic jet at Los Angeles Spaceport. I was dead tired from the trip. I checked in at the nearest inexpensive hotel.
This is your room, sir.
Just put the bags down, will you? I'll unpack myself.
Yes, sir. Just back from outer space, sir?
Yeah, that's right. How could you tell?
Sea legs.
Sea legs?
Well, the way you walk. You can tell when somebody's been in the low grav systems.
Oh, here.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Craig. For another 5 units, I'll tell you where it is.
Where what is?
You know, the mic.
Mic?
Okay, make it 3 units. I won't hold you up.
You mean a microphone?
Yeah, that's right. They wanted to put screens in, but the boss convinced him there ain't any freedomites ever stay here.
Freedomites?
Not so loud. You want to get controlled? No. No. Here's the money. Where is it?
It's in the bed illuminator. You can short it with a razor blade.
Thanks.
You, want any sensation tapes?
What are they?
You know, metal image tapes. Oh, boy, you've been away from Terra a long time.
Wait a minute, before you go, son.
Yeah?
Where's the minerals building? I have to report there for a job interview.
Oh, that's in the government cluster. Fifth level at X and second.
Thanks. I'll want breakfast about 8 o'clock.
Well, I'll need your ISS units.
My what?
Your ration units.
I don't have any ration units.
You have your ident card?
Look, I just got here an hour ago.
Well, you better go see the Civil Control Board tomorrow. If you want to eat, that is.
All right, where do I find the control board?
Government cluster. But don't worry. If you don't find them, they'll find you.
I went to sleep that night with the uneasy feeling that somebody was watching me. It had been a weird day. I hadn't exactly liked it. Well, I told myself, it figured that there'd be more formalities and rigmarole on Earth than there were out in the systems, especially at first. Still, I couldn't get the idea of the concealed microphone out of my mind.
You may relax, Mr. Craig. You are Mr. Craig.
Yes, Robert Craig.
You aren't nervous, are you?
No. This is my first time before the control board, and... Well, it's my first time.
Flight officer, eh? Somewhat unusual for a vigorous young man like yourself abandoning space service, isn't it?
I don't know. Is it?
Leaving something behind, Mr. Craig?
No.
You don't like this sort of affair, do you, Mr. Craig?
Well, I'm afraid I don't quite see its necessity. I served the intergalactic service well. My records prove it.
It's enough impertinence, Mr. Craig. Answer the questions. You are a Terran?
Yes.
Where are your loyalties?
I don't understand.
Your first loyalties are to Intergalactic, is that right?
Is there a distinction?
Do you wish to be held in contempt of this board?
Of course not.
Then you will confine your responses to simple yes answers. Now, Mr. Craig, we shall begin again. Please try to show restraint of emotion. You are here to petition for an identity card provisional code 2 type. You maintain that you've never been on Terra before. Indeed, you state that you've never had a political affiliation.
Yes.
What are your reactions to the latest acts of the Liberal Party?
I have none.
You do not condemn the Liberal Party?
Well, I...
Then you must favor it.
I don't know anything about it.
Now then, Mr. Craig. The import service report shows that you passed your test aboard your ship. You were unable to accomplish this through night study.
Yes.
Yet you maintain in your application that you had considered the space service a career.
I changed my mind.
Oh, you changed your mind. I see. I see, too, that you have petitioned the board for a private means of conveyance. Why do you wish to own your own transportation vehicle?
To make it easier to get around, I report to my job and...
What job?
I passed the exam for the import service. I report today.
Where are you living, Mr. Craig?
At the Star Hotel.
Very well. You'll wait outside in the waiting room until you're called again.
I waited about 2 hours in the porcelainized waiting room of the Civil Control Board. Then I was called over to the clerk's desk at a small window. He stamped some cards for me.
Craig!
Here.
Here's your stuff. Class 1 provisional ident card. Sign it and fingerprint it. Don't lose it. If you do, you'll be picked up by the control agents.
I petitioned for a Class 2 card.
You get a Class 1. This entitles you to maintain an apartment in the lower level of the Beverly Project. Here's your clothing ration. You'll have to turn in that leather flight jacket.
No, wait a minute. I had this made on Chuan. Listen, I can remove the insignia.
That is not the point. Your clothing ration is defined by law. There are no exceptions. This is your food ration.
What's all this medical stuff on the card?
You are rationed fairly in accordance with your particular metabolism.
Oh, you're kidding.
I do not kid, Mr. Craig.
Well, what about a car? I asked to be allowed to buy a car.
I see. Your petition to be permitted to purchase a private means of transportation is hereby denied.
walked out of the control board feeling like a man who has just come out of free fall into a hypergravity system. Instead of reporting to the import service for my initial job interview, I walked around the city. I don't know how long I walked, maybe an hour, maybe two. After a while, I came to the outskirts of old Los Angeles. There was a big fence around it and the usual signs. Radioactivity. Beware. It was just a pile of rubble and twisted girders. I looked at it for a while and then turned around and headed for the intergalactic freight office.
So you figured you made a mistake.
Yeah, that's right. You don't hear much about Terra out there.
And you want me to sign you back into Intergalactic?
Yes.
You got any character references?
No, not here on Earth, but I can post a good-sized bond if they'll release my ISS units.
What's your rating?
I can handle anything, up to 15 G's acceleration on my old license.
You got a Terran contract with import service, you said?
I haven't started work yet.
Look, kid. Mr. Craig, is it? How long you been on Earth?
2 days.
So you're a spaceman. Flight officer, ex-flight officer. You know how to navigate through four star zones and the asteroid belt thrown in. You got a license for 15 G's, could get five more with a check flight. You got enough brains to pass the import senior routers exam. But you ain't got enough sense to come in out of the rain. We get guys like you every day. You're hot, you're big, you're raring to go. But you ain't gone nowhere.
I'm listening.
I don't know how you got here, Craig. Maybe you did quit honorable, or maybe you went and burned up a colony someplace.
That would be in my records.
The point is, it don't make any difference. Nobody leaves Terra without a permit. Nobody gets a permit to go back to space once he hits this old apple.
Why not? Are they afraid somebody will tell what it's like?
Oh, son, you got things to learn. One is you don't go shooting off your mouth. Another is Terra's changed a lot since the radioactive wars. We're going places, doing things. Big places, big things. You've got to fit into that, kid. Move with it. Stick around. You still got your sea legs. You're gonna like it here. You can make a quick dollar and spend it quick, too. But you'd better smarten up, or you'll finish scrubbing radioactive dust off girders.
That's the story, huh? The whole story?
That's it. Everything runs by a system. And, son, you can't buck the system.
Yeah. I don't suppose there's any place around here a guy could get a quick drink.
Oh, yeah, out at the end of Y Street, they got a little place you can buy an Acadian Taz. Pluto's, they call it.
Thanks.
Yeah, get it out of your system, then settle down. That's my advice.
Thanks. So long.
Get me the control agent. He just left here. He's on his way to the Pluto Cafe.
Hey, waiter, bring me another drink for the young lady.
Wow.
Now then, where were we?
Well, I don't know. In fact, I still don't know why you're buying me free drinks.
I told you, want somebody to talk to.
You, a purist? Or maybe you don't like the brand of Sensatia tapes they're peddling these days.
You know, you don't have a bad face, really, underneath the makeup. I mean, it's a little crooked, but it ain't bad, really.
Thanks. Does me pretty good.
Well, what's your name?
Gloria.
Oh, sure. Sure. Sure, I remember. Gloria!
Enough to drink.
No, not yet. You know, I look around, I see all these people with their faces all froze up like plastic. And I feel like I got to know somebody or I go out of my mind. So what happens? Everybody is afraid. I mean, what happened? Whatever happened to freedom? What's the matter? Did I say something? Was everybody so quiet about all of a sudden?
Okay. Come with me.
Hey, well, who are you?
Control board agent.
Hey, I wasn't with him. Honest, he just picked me up and bought me a drink and started shooting off his mouth. I wasn't with him.
Let's go, Mac.
Wait a minute. What for?
You'll find that out. Come on. On your feet.
Okay. Carl, keep your hands off. I'll go with you.
Everybody else, just mind your own business. You, girlie.
Yeah?
Let's see your ident card.
Here.
You live at this address?
Yeah.
Alone?
With my sister.
Maybe some night you could go to a movie or something. We could spend some time getting acquainted.
Yeah. Yeah, sometime.
God, I'll call you.
Hey, I need my dent card back. I can't get rations without it.
I'll keep it. Bring it back myself.
Why don't you give the girl her card? No!
Well, maybe you mind your own business. Let's go. You walk just a little in front of me.
He was a big man, maybe 250 pounds, and he shuffled when he walked. He'd hit me right across the right shoulder with a sort of rubber truncheon. Now it began to ache. We're walking along a sort of back street. Everywhere in the universe there were such streets. Streets where you could find freedom in anonymity, a compromise between lawlessness and law. They are permitted by the authorities because it is necessary to have a place for those who are not permitted elsewhere.
Okay, step into the stairway. Hurry up, you fool. We're being followed.
Well, we're followed by whom?
Don't ask questions. Who's you told?
Don't I have any rights?
You've got the right to get hit over the head unless you do what you're told. Now, quit. Hey, come in. In here. Hurry.
Hey, who are they shooting at, you or me?
Both of us. Down these steps.
Stop! Stop or we'll fire!
Through this door. Now, duck behind that pillar. Don't make a sound.
You see them?
Not a trace.
Come on. They probably slipped out.
Walk through the tunnel behind you. One false move and you're finished. Go on.
From the direction of the tunnel, I guessed it was part of an old sewage system that led toward the ruined city. I don't know how long we walked, maybe an hour. Finally, we came to a small wooden door.
Stop here. Okay, let's have it.
What?
The tube.
I don't know what you mean.
Our detectives picked it up on you the minute you got off the plane. You're carrying a radioactive message tube with a periodic emission signal. I'll need to have it before we can go any further.
You mean the tube that old Charlie gave me?
Old Charlie?
Yes, Charlie Brockman. The old spaceman who was in the hospital with me.
Where is it?
I don't know. I think it's in my pocket. I never even bothered to open it.
Do it now.
Let me see. Oh, yeah, here it is.
Open it.
It's empty.
That's right. The message is in the tube itself. We identify our people by the radioactive pattern.
Our people?
You'll see.
Come in. Make it fast.
This the one?
This is the one.
Has he been drugged?
He's had PON. A massive dose at the Pluto.
Good. Mr. Craig, my name's Cocteau. This is Mr. Brannigan. You're probably quite bewildered about all this. Let me clarify the situation. You're now in the headquarters of the Freedomites, underneath the radioactive part of old Los Angeles. Mr. Brannigan is not a control agent. He's one of our men. We've been watching you ever since we detected the message tube as your ship was approaching Earth.
Now, wait a minute. You guys are Freedomites?
That's right.
You're pretty illegal, aren't you?
Let's say our lives aren't worth a snap of your fingers if we're caught.
All right, who are you? Where are you from?
Most of us are from the same place you're from, outer space. Many of us had the same history you have. We shipped into Earth and became disillusioned and went to the intergalactic freight office to apply for a job. The man at the office, the man who made the speech about coming in out of the rain, is one of our agents.
Aren't you taking a chance telling me all this?
Not at all. At the Pluto, you were given a massive dose of PON. You won't remember anything that happened to you after the drug hits you in an hour or so. It works like a shock. Everything will be repressed into the unconscious.
Ah, I see.
Very neat.
It will exist in your unconscious, however. Somewhere, because you're the kind of man you are, because living in space has taught you the blessing of feeling free, you'll be able to draw upon your unconscious knowledge when you need to.
And when will that be, Mr. Cocteau?
That depends on whether you decide to join us or not.
Join you in what? I haven't the faintest idea of what you're trying to do. For all I know, you're a bunch of traitors. You know, I've heard this comes the revolution stuff before.
My friend, you're woefully ignorant of our aims, as is to be expected. We anticipate no revolution. We print no leaflets, publish no newspaper, and we have no world plan for conquest. The kind of totalitarian mind which subscribes to tight economic systems like the ancient Marxism of the communists is abhorrent to us. We're interested in only one thing, the preservation of the idea of freedom. Our fear is that men will forget what it's like to feel free.
Well, how do you expect to accomplish this?
Our concepts are being kept alive in only one place in the universe today.
Outer space?
Exactly. On the frontiers of the universe, where freedom is a condition of life and growth.
Suppose I join you. How can I help?
You're an experienced pilot. We have enough connections to do some plastic surgery on your face and get you a position piloting a spaceship again. You'll remember nothing of your mission. But you will remember that you have been back to Earth, what it was like. You'll be able, carefully, of course, to tell people, to help keep the idea of freedom alive. Think it over carefully. You have 20 minutes before the drug takes effect.
I don't need 20 minutes. I'll do it.
Good. In exactly 48 hours, you'll wake up in your hotel bed with a new face, the identity card of a man named Harold Janus. You'll not remember how you got them or why, but you'll know what to do with his identity. He is, or was, master navigator on the Earth-Mars run. Good luck, Mr. Craig.
I woke up in the hotel bed, feeling like a man who has hung one on but good. I looked into the mirror and I saw the face of another man. I looked in my wallet and discovered that I was Harold Janus, navigator for Intergalactic, holder of a license for 15 Gs. I wondered where it came from, how I got it, but I asked no questions. This license, this ident card, meant freedom. I walked out of the hotel feeling steady for the first time. I'd gotten my sea legs at last.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features The Venus Trap by Evelyn E. Smith. One thing man never planned to take along into space with him was the Eternal Triangle, especially a true blue triangle like this one. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Sea Legs, a story from the pages of Galaxy, written by Frank Petrocchi and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were William Redfield, James Stevens, Stan Early, Charles Penman, James Dukas, Richard Hamilton, Jack Orison, Jack Grimes, Craig McDonald, Ralph Bell, Kermit Murdoch, and Frederica Chandler. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production. Hear Politics and Primaries, Dateline, Ohio and Indiana, tonight on NBC Radio.
X-1, on Tuned to Yesterday from May 1st, 1956 on NBC. And that wraps up this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBonnier. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you.